ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ടവും വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറി ശ്രീശീല പ്രഭുപാദ് നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രസായ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിജി നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണെ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണെ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹ്യ ഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേദ് ഭവേദ് യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമ സംകീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപപ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യദന്വയാദിതരദ ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദ യ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സുരയം തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത കൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സതാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവം അത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാവരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുകമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാം യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുവേദം അപേതകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജ്ജുഹാവാം പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയ തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മേ യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപം അതിഥിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനം ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം കതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കൊണിതാദൃതാനനെന്തോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭദാ മുരാരേ മധുരിം ന കണികാഭി കാഭികാഭി നമാ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഇതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീ ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദം പ്രജസ്ത്രീണം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാനവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായം അതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുത സ്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവേ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈർക്രമോപനിഷദേ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണേ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ We have to now start the Canto 11 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 11 is popularly known as Ekadasham. Ekadasha Skandam is the Bhagavatam is so famous that among the learned circles, particularly the great acharyas and the great commentators of Srimad Bhagavatam, they give a lot of importance to this Canto 11 because in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are two cantos which are the most important cantos. Isn't it? We all know that. Why they are important? Because Srimad Bhagavatam is centered around the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. And Krishna is present in these two cantos to this full extent. Just like in the 10th canto, Krishna is known as through his Pravarti Lila. The Canto 11 is Nivrti Lila. We will come to that later, what Pravarti Lila and Nivrti Lila is all about. So basically, Srimad Bhagavatam is centered around these two cantos, 10 and 11. If someone understands these two 10 and 11 cantos well, you could more or less say he has understood Bhagavatam very well. That is the beauty of these two cantos, Canto 10 and Canto 11. Krishna is personally present there in these two cantos. No doubt, Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. That is confirmed in the Padma Puranam. That is why we say every time, Srimad Bhagavadakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. Pratyaksha Krishna is Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to feel Krishna, it is through Srimad Bhagavatam you feel. Krishna's presence in the Bhagavatam is such. So, we will, in the Padma Puranam, when the Srimad Bhagavatam's glories are spoken, like Bhagavatam's glories are spoken in two Puranas, one is in Padma Puranam, other one is in Skanda Puranam. In two Puranams, in two different ways, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken. So, in Padma Puranam, while talking about the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the description there. Sachidananda Rubaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave. That is the prayer we sing. Tabatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Nama. Obeisances to Supreme Personality Krishna. Why? Sachidananda Rubaya. Krishna's form is Sachidanandam. Remember, in the Brahma Samhita also you have heard this. Ishwara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraham. So this Sat, Chit and Anandam, that means Sat, Chit and Anandam, that is the form of Krishna, isn't it? Krishna's form is Sachidanandam. If he is referred to anyone as Sachidanandam, it is Krishna. Straight away it is referred to Krishna. Why it is spoken like that about Sachidananda form as Krishna? These three things, Sat, Chit and Anandam, that are the characteristics of Krishna's personality. Sat means something that is real, eternally existing. It exists all the time. That is why it's called Sat. Sat means that. Sat means something which has got the essence. The essence is that. The essence means that something which exists all the time. Therefore it is called Sat. Everything else is not Sat. For example, so much things in the matter, our material body, this is not Sat. This is all Asat. It's the opposite. Because it has got only a temporary existence. The second thing is Chit. What is this Chit means? Chit is the most important thing out of these three. Sat, Chit and Anandam, out of those three things, the Chit is the most important thing. The Chit means actually the consciousness. The consciousness, avabhodam. Bhodam it is called in the Sanskrit language. It's called bhodam or avabhodam because it is through consciousness that we know the existence of everything, isn't it? So how do we know that something exists? So like just like this chair exists, table exists, the room exists. Why? Because that knowledge or consciousness is in us to become aware of that. That awareness of something is called Chit. So awareness of something is called Chit. So Sat is there, Chit is there. And the third thing is called Anandam. Anandam means, in Sanskrit, when in spiritual terms, Anandam means the state of mind where there is no happiness or no distress. Neither of them. That is the state where the mind is very still. The yogis call it like that. A still mind which does not get disturbed by anything. So these three things, Sat, Chit and Anandam, are the three elements in which Krishna's form is defined. Out of those three, the Chit is the most important one, because it is through this Chit that you know Anandam. It is through Chit you know the Sat, the existence, isn't it? Anything that exists in this world, how do we know it exists? It exists because we have that capacity to know things or awareness through what is known as consciousness. So importance of consciousness is such that without that Chit, we cannot perceive anything in this world, no matter what it is. And therefore, the Chit aspect of Krishna is the most important thing. And that is what makes us aware of the Sat as well as the Anandam, or the blissful aspect of Krishna. Both are known through Chit. So, Sachidananda Rubaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave. What else is there? Vishwalpati. Vishwalpati means the origin of this creation. The origin of this creation. Where did this come? This whole cosmic creation. What we see in this in our eyes and we experience it through our different senses of knowledge. Where did this come to us? Where did this come to us? It came to us because it came from Krishna. Sachidananda Rubaya Vishwalpatyadi Hedave. He is the cause of creation. All that has come from Krishna. Eventually, it will all go back to Krishna. So, Krishna is the, precisely, Krishna is the scene behind from whom everything emanates. Janmadhyase yataha. All these definitions in the Bhagavadam is referring to that. So, Vishwalpatyadi Hedave, the Vishwat Ulpati. Ulpati means the birth of this creation. Where is it coming from? From Krishna. Then, Tabatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Nama. Tabatrayam. Srimad Bhagavadam's purpose is to eradicate or to alleviate all kinds of miseries. Miseries are classified into three categories. You know, Tabatrayam means Adhyatmigam, Adibhaudigam and Adidevigam. Three kinds of miseries. You are familiar with all these things. Those who have read Srimad Bhagavadam for some time, they will know these things. Now, out of these three things, Adhyatmigam, Adibhaudigam and Adidevigam, you must know where it's coming from. Because once you know that, then it will also give you a better understanding of it. Adhyatmika means that which originates from within the body, mind, from body, from our head, from intelligence, or whatever. Anything that originates from within is called Adhyatmika. Anything that originates from within, problems that happens to us, sometimes we lose our mind, isn't it? Sometimes we get very angry, sometimes we get very depressed, very different kinds of disturbances happens into the mind. Where does this originate from? It originates from within. Nobody has done it. It has originated from within. Now, such things which originates from within is called Adhyatmika. And the cause of Adhyatmik distress is karma. Is karma. Karma is the cause of Adhyatmik distress. Not the other two. Adi Bhaudhikam, Adi Devikam is not due to karma. That we'll see where it's coming from. So, out of the three, Adhyatmikam, Adi Bhaudhikam and Adi Devikam, Adhyatmik distress is caused by our past actions. That is what is causing that distress in us. If we have acted very sinfully, either in this life or in previous lifetimes, it will come back to us in the form of this Adhyatmik distress. That is the nature. Adi Bhaudhik distress is being present in this material world, you will get it. From somewhere, somebody will throw it at you, whether we want it or don't want it. So, that is the nature of Adi Bhaudhik. And if you ask what is the reason behind it, reason is this, that you are here. That's all. That's enough. The very fact that you are present in this material world, the very nature of material world is such that from other living entities and other sources, you will have to experience some distress. They will not let you go here peacefully. They will put something. Just like we also do the same thing. We come here crying, we make others cry and we go. Isn't it? The same thing. So crying and making others cry is a part of this world. It's a business here that everybody does. So Adi Bhaudhik is that category. That is not coming from karma. Karma comes only from Adhyatmikam. Now the third category, which is Adi Devik, which is called the Adi Devik. This Adi Devik thing is a little more different, difficult to understand, because Deva means in Sanskrit Adrishtam. Adrishtam means which cannot be seen. You don't know what's the cause behind it. What is actually causing that? You don't know. So, therefore it is called Adi Devik, Adrishtam. Adrishtam means unknown factor. And because it is like that, you cannot trace out what is the cause of that distress. Sometimes we get this a heavy flood, or a cyclone, or a earthquake, or such distress, tsunami and all these kind of things, they all go into this category of Adi Devik, where you will not be able to trace out the cause of that. It is caused Adrishtam. In Shastram it is called Adrishtam Devam, therefore it's called Adi Devik. Even if you say, that is like when the cyclone happens, they will forecast to you that the cyclone is coming. Due to some depression in the Atlantic Ocean or Pacific Ocean or whatever it is. That is okay. But what caused that distress? You can't go beyond than that. Up to a limit you can inquire and then you stop there. If you keep inquiring what caused this and why the depression happened and why the what was the reason for that to develop, there is no answer to that. Only that you can start from a particular point to say that the depression happened and the cyclone was forecast, it happened and we all got affected by that. So, this Adhyatmikam, Adi Bhaudhikam, Adi Devikam, three different kinds of distresses, if one wants to free oneself from that, then the Balpuranam is saying, Shri Krishnaya Vayam Numa, you have to take Krishna's shelter. That is the answer to that. Otherwise, there is no other way you can. Something or the other will always be there in this world to chasing us. Something or the other will always be chasing us. Either it is Adhyatmikam, or it is Adi Bhaudhikam, or it is Adi Devikam, or Adi Devikam. One of these things will always cause problems. So, generally, this is the reason the great sages, they knew that distress is always there in this world. There is no one free from distress. Till this date, nobody has come to this world without distress. The fact that we all come to this world crying, we all come to this world crying, isn't it? When we come out of the womb of the mother, actually we cry here. Why can't we come out laughing? Why do we cry? That's the question, isn't it? We have to come here crying. It looks like that. And when you go to these big hospitals and so many babies getting born there, not one of them is smiling. They're all crying, isn't it? They're all crying. And not only that, when they grow up, say by the age of 5-6 years old, intelligence has not developed enough, but that playful mood has built up very well. We want to play all the time. And sometimes we become so absorbed in that, playing becomes our whole activity in the day. We don't have to go to school, but we are at the same time, everything is looked after at home. So naturally you feel a certain happiness from that, and you enjoy this playing and doing mucking around and doing all nonsense, this, then everything. And then you grow up, and when you grow up, you get younger, youth, age, the interest changes. It's not the same mood when you were in the boy's body, young boy's body. It's a little different now. Further interest develop, and then a householder life after that for a long period of time, and then eventually old age comes and catches us, and we become very thoughtful at that time. We become start thinking, all the time thinking. Now the thinking is also in another interesting thing. What can we think about? We can think about the past, we can think about the future, isn't it? You can't think about the present, because the moment you think about something, it has become past. The time is finished. So basically all what we are thinking about is past or future. Past, what has happened, you can't do anything about it. It has happened already. So the past is to be written off. There's not a lot you can do about it. Future, you don't know what will happen, how it's going to come. But you can keep meditating on that. Will it happen like this? Will it happen like that? No answer. How future will come. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is, do not worry about past, do not worry about the future. Live in the present, what we are today. Live in the present. Because if you live in the present, and if you live God conscious, in God consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, in the present time, you have made your life successful. It is not something to be kept for the future. It is not something to be lamenting about the past. They are both useless. This is the Vedic injunction. Vedic injunction is very clear that today you are living, you have God consciousness. So if this consciousness is utilized properly, and that will liberate us from material existence once for all. And that is why it's so important not to miss this human form of life, what we have got. Today, in this human body, something is possible, which is not possible in any other form of body, isn't it? What did Krishna say about that? Brahma-ava-loka-dishanam-upamapa-deva. That is what he said. That when Brahma created all different living entities, he never got satisfaction. But when he created the human form of body, Brahma-ava-loka-dishanam-udamapa-deva. It says like that. That Brahma got satisfaction. At least I got one form which has got it right. Who can do something in that form? What's that? He can develop Krishna consciousness. That's the only benefit of this human body. Everything else is a loss in this body. So Krishna says, instead of wasting time in the past or in the future, right now in this body, settle themselves in Krishna consciousness. And if we develop and train up our mind in that way, by chanting the glories of Krishna, chanting the holy name all the time, eventually, because we are lived in the present state of mind, it will, by the time when we leave up the body, we can go back home, back to Krishna. This is the whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam, to teach us this one point. So, there, in the Bhagavatam, because the topic is a very deep subject in the Bhagavatam, great commentators have thought through this very deeply, and they have come up with a very deeper understanding of life, deeper understanding of how to survive in this world, deeper understanding of how to spend our energy in what way. All these things are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we have spoken about these two cantos, Canto 10 and Canto 11, the importance of these two cantos. They are so important that the first 9 cantos in the Bhagavatam is only to prepare us to understand the 10th and 11th. You could say like that. That if these first 9 cantos which you have seen before, is only to bring us to this point that who is Krishna? Who is Krishna? And what is our relationship with Him? These are the two things that is discussed in the Canto 10 and Canto 11. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know that there are the topics what are discussed in each canto is spoken in one verse there, isn't it? Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam udaya manvantaram ishanukatha nirodho mukti ashrayaham. There, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit, Atra sargo visargascha. This is in the second canto. Third canto begins with what is known as sargam. Sargam means primary creation. That means creation from Krishna's side. How Krishna has created. Krishna created what? Krishna created maya, mahatattvam, ahamtattvam, pradhanam. From that three sattvam, rajas and tamas, three modes of nature. And then the subsequently the ahamtattvam, that ego came up. And then after that, all the five material elements, and then mind, intelligence and false ego, all those things, Satya Ahangaram, Rajas Ahangaram, which we have all discussed in the third canto before, all these things are Krishna's creation. It's not our creation, isn't it? They have come from Krishna and Brahma. Through Brahma they all manifested. And all the other living entities who had come, they are all Krishna's creation. This is called Sargam. So this topic Sargam is discussed in the third canto. We have seen that before. And you also know that in the fourth canto, what is known as Visargam is discussed. Visargam. Visargam means, already what Krishna has created, from that, people like us, human society and others, we started using that creation and started building further from there. Isn't it? For example, a householder. Householder, associate, a man associates with a woman. And then children are born from that. Children born from that. That all comes in Visargam. That all comes in Visargam. Because it's a secondary creation. It's not the primary creation. Primary creation is what is third canto. Secondary creation is the fourth canto. And then we saw again, Atra Sargo Visargascha. And then we also noticed one thing there. When everything is done under Krishna's direction, when under Krishna's directions, everything goes fine in this world. That is why Sargam is going on very well. There is no problem there in Sargam. But the moment when Visargam comes in, the fourth canto, you will notice completely chaos. So many problems there developed. It was not there in the third canto. Why it came up in the fourth canto? Because it's Visargam. Problems like, let's look at this way. In order to show the women, children, young men and old men, four different stories are discussed in that fourth canto. Isn't it? Four stories are discussed there. First of all, the story of Daksha Prajapati. What happened to Daksha? He offended the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The result was that the head was gone. The head was gone. Then Sadidevi story. Sadidevi, because of all what happened in that Daksha sacrifice, Sadidevi had to give up her body and has to take birth again as Sri Parvati later, Himavan's daughter, Himalaya's daughter. So all those things. Then the story of Dhruva Maharaj, to tell us that even a young child like Dhruva, who is only 5 years old, he, because he took the right decision to go to the forest and to inquire about Krishna, he came up in his life successfully, to show us that. That story is spoken in the fourth canto. Then there is a story of Prajina Barhis, a king, an older person. What happened to him? Throughout the life, without caring for Krishna, without caring for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he simply stuck with Karmagandam. That's what mistake he did. He stuck with Karmagandam. And the idea was to perform as many sacrifices as possible in life and goes to the spiritual world. Not the spiritual world, to the heavenly planets and enjoy there more. This was in his head all the time. And the result was that he committed so many sinful activities, so many innocent animals were slaughtered. And one day, when Prajina were his children, who were the Prajedas, they went away from home to execute penances. Sridharada Maharshi was sent there by Krishna to teach this king some sense, to bring some sense into his head. That story you know in the Bhagavatam, how Puranjana's story was spoken in the fourth canto. Puranjana's story was spoken in the fourth canto for this reason, to teach Prachina Brahmis some understanding of Karmakandam, Jnanakandam and Upasanakandam. Sometimes in the Vedic tradition, many times people get stuck with Karmakandam and then gets attracted by that. They get attracted. Even today it happens. I can give you so many examples how it happens. Karmakandam attracts people. Why? Because results come straight away. Results are there. It's guaranteed results, isn't it? You know, in every religion there is a position called priest, isn't it? Priest. So priest is respected. Why? Because priest is given some position and he performs these religious rituals for the people and he receives some income from that. At the same time, he is looked upon by people as a representative of God, or representing, more or less you can say he is the connection between us and God. In that his role, in that role, he functions, isn't it? But in Vedic system, it's not like that. That's what one must understand. In Vedic system, if you are a priest, you are considered to be very low class. Why? Because you are making a merchandise, sale of spiritual knowledge. There you have lost the whole spirit. Very spirit of spiritual knowledge is lost as soon as you become a priest. This is the firm thing. Prabhupada repeats this in the Bhagavatam in several instances, that priestly duties is not our duty. Our duty is to understand Krishna consciousness and to serve Krishna wholeheartedly without expecting anything in return. That is love. That is bhakti. Otherwise, priest is not bhakti. He is not bhakta. He is a servant. He is an employed person. So therefore, priestly duties in Vedic philosophy is looked down. There are many, many instances from Brahminical communities due to poverty. They went into priestly business. And later on they realized the mistake. For survival reasons, sometimes people do it. Isn't it? But unfortunately what happens is, later period, people started thinking, oh, we need a priest. Without a priest, how can we perform our life? And we started glorifying this priest, and priest started realizing there is money to be made. Let me enjoy this life. This is unfortunate. This is not Vedic philosophy. Krishna consciousness and Vedic philosophy is based on the understanding that Krishna is saying there that this Karmakandam and those people who are chasing that Karmakandam, anyone in this world, have to be looked down upon. And in the Bhagavadam, the story of Prajina Brahmis is only spoken to explain to us that let Narada Maharshi go and give some instructions to him and bring him out of that consciousness of Karmakandam. So, this is how the fourth canto finishes. In everything in fourth canto is causing a lot of upheavals in the mind of the different people. And therefore, fourth canto is called sthanam. Atra visargascha sthanam poshanam. Now, the next one is the poshanam. Poshanam means... Whatever may have happened in life, whatever may have happened in our life, due to some unknown reasons, sometimes we fall down. We fall down in our life. We fall, get victimized by the lower modes of nature. Just like someone becomes an alcoholic. Someone gets addicted to drugs, addicted to sense enjoyment or womanizing and things like that. Anything can happen in life, isn't it? There is no guarantee that we are all great souls from birth and we live like this forever. Always there is a possibility that we may end up in difficult conditions in life. Krishna is saying there in the sixth canto, there is this Krishna's mercy of what is known as poshanam. So poshanam means even if one has fallen down, somehow or the other, if he has held on to Krishna's lotus feet and taken Krishna's shelter, he will eventually come out successfully in his life. That is that message in the sixth canto. And in order to explain that to us, that the famous incident of Ajamila story is put in there. Now, you saw in the fifth canto, sthanam was shown. Why was sthanam shown? Those who are engaged in sargo visarga is a sthanam. Those who are engaged in visargam, in demoniac activities, or who don't care for Krishna, who act totally independently and who thinks that they have the freedom to do what they want to do and act in an irresponsible way in this human life, such people need to be kept in a particular place, isn't it? Kept in a particular place. They need also a separate accommodation, just like the jail in this world. So the jails are meant for those who are criminal, who have broken the law. So in Krishna's eyes also, there are criminals, people who break the law. For them, they have to go to a particular place. That is called sthanam. And that is why the whole fifth canto talks about the hellish planets. Talks about the hellish planets. Only with this intention, hellish planets meant for those who have committed activities like in the fourth canto, visargam. Visargam. So, sargam, visargam, sthanam, and then poshanam is the sixth canto. Sixth canto is poshanam. So, through poshanam, Krishna is teaching us that even if one has fallen down, doesn't matter. If he is interested in Krishna consciousness, if he comes to me, he has a shelter. He has a shelter. This is the great mercy of Krishna. No matter, we can all fall. There is no guarantee that we will always stay above the material world. We cannot, because modes of nature are so powerful. At what point in life, under what conditions, we will stay in that is unknown to us. Nobody knows. And people know that how much sinful activities we are forced to do sometimes without our knowledge. Say for example, you became a prime minister of a country or a president of a big country. What happens? You have to make sometimes some decisions. You don't even know the implications of those decisions. Maybe in the name of the country you are doing that. You may be sending loads of soldiers to fight a war somewhere thousands of miles away. And many, many innocent soldiers, young men, may get slaughtered or butchered in that war. Do you think the person who took the decision can escape from the reaction of that? No, it is not possible. So, by hook or crook, by manipulating the waters or somehow, you got into that position. For what? To accumulate more sinful reactions. That's what you got from that. So in other words, in this life it may all look very glamorous. It may all look very glamorous. But what you have brought in this life is for many more material bodies for future to suffer. That's what you have acquired from this life. So all these things has to be thought about while in this world, that our actions are important, how that actions can sometimes drive us into to sinful activities, and the results of that is that we may have to pay for it at some time or the other. That will come back to us. So, portionam, even if that all happens, Krishna says, somehow or the other we have fallen down and we have fallen into really to the lowest situation. Even in that condition, Krishna says, he can come back to me. If he starts chanting the holy names of Krishna, he says, I offer that shelter to him. To prove that point, Ajamila's story was spoken in the sixth canto, Poshanam. So, Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam. Then what else? After this, one time in the history, Bhagavatam Sukadeva Goswami says, sometime during the history, there were such great personalities who followed these instructions very well. And they executed and administered this creation very well, according to the Krishna's injunctions. And they are the Manvantara Adhipathis, or Manus. Swayambhuva Manu, Swarojusha Manu, Uttaman, Uttama Manu, Tamasa Manu, Rayavada Manu. There is a list of the 14 Manus mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So why were they glorified? Because they strictly followed the injunctions, Krishna's injunctions. And because of that, during their time, Krishna appeared in this world in different forms. All the different incarnations happened at these different Manu's times. Each Manu's time, different incarnations have happened. That we have studied. In Swayambhuva Manu's time, which incarnation happened? Tamasa Manu's time, which one happened? Uttama's time, which happened? Rayavada Manu's time, which happened? Like that, all the different Manu's, different incarnations happened because of their excellent administration and complete execution of Krishna's instructions. That was their success. So, you can see, Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam. Poshanam and then Manvantaram. Manvantaram is the eighth canto. So the eighth canto is the story of those great personalities who followed that. Then after that, Sukadeva Goswami takes us to the ninth canto. In the ninth canto, what did we see? We saw there that from these Manus, family of these Manus, two different great dynasties came up. two different dynasties came up. What are they? The solar dynasty, Surya Vamsham, and the lunar dynasty, Chandra Vamsham. Two dynasties were born from these kings. And because those kings in both these dynasties were excellent personalities, they followed, and their ninth canto is such a beautiful canto that those kings, they were all Kshatriyas, and they all enjoyed their material life to the peak. How much you can enjoy? To the peak, they have enjoyed. But the greatness among them was that at some point in time, they understood the futility of material life. They gave up everything, went to the forest, executed the austerities and penances, and went back to the spiritual world. This is the beauty of those kings in the ninth canto. That is why ninth canto continuously talks about one king after the other. Names and names, loads of names. And only the important kings are, Sudeva Goswami has spoken in depth. There is so much to read about ninth canto. So in that ninth canto you will notice there are two dynasties, solar dynasty and lunar dynasty. In solar dynasty, because they served the Supreme Personality very well, Supreme Personality appeared in that dynasty as Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra. And because the lunar dynasty got Krishna as their present for them. The solar dynasty got Ramachandra as the present and lunar dynasty got Krishna as the present. You see the two dynasties, how they got themselves established through these two personalities. Solar dynasty will always be remembered in the creation so long as Ramachandra's name is remembered in this creation. Krishna's name will always be remembered. As long as Krishna is remembered, lunar dynasty will also be there behind them. That is their good fortune. The good fortune of these two dynasties to get Ramachandra as the son and Krishna as the member of their family. So, that is the ninth canto. Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam, Manandaram, Ishanukatha. That is what is called ninth canto. Ninth canto is called Ishanukatha. So, these nine cantos, what we have briefly spoken about, is only for the purpose of preparing us to understand the tenth canto. Why? It is in tenth canto what is known as Nirodham happens. Nirodham means how to control the mind. How to control the mind. What is this, all these yogic processes different people are doing, whether it is Swami Ramdev, or whether it is us, devotees, or whether jnanis, or whether yogis, everybody practices some process, isn't it? Some sadhana, everybody executes. Ashtanga yogis, I am talking about. All are practicing some yoga system. For what? And the goal at the end is to get the mind under control, isn't it? Mano Nirodham. It's called Mano Nirodham. So, to get this mind, because the mind is not under control, therefore, nothing is working for us, spiritually also. That's what's happening, isn't it? So, every time when we start chanting the holy name, it doesn't happen easily. After a while only, it comes down, all the different thought processes which coming one after the other. It takes a long time, isn't it? And sometimes we notice also that how difficult it is to control this mind and to focus it on one thing, isn't it? To focus on one thing is very, very difficult. And to focus on Krishna's form, still more difficult, because mind, first of all, will never listen. Will never listen. It's more like a monkey moving around all the time. No matter how much hard you try, this control of mind is not exactly the concentration what we are talking about in the scientific field. In scientific field, when you talk about concentration, is to concentrate on some problem in physics or chemistry or mathematics, and then withdraw from that, isn't it? Only that problem you are able to concentrate on. Nothing else. That's what you are concentrating upon. On a particular problem. Either physics problem or chemistry problem or mathematical problem or any other problem. That's where your concentration is mostly. But the concentration in the spiritual terms is a little different. Here what involves is that the mind has to stop all thoughts. Continuous thoughts are coming in. And that must stop. It should come to a still. And the mind should be able to absorb on Krishna. That can only happen when all the other thoughts stops itself, isn't it? Otherwise it won't get absorbed in Krishna. So this is called Mano Nirodham. And that title, Nirodham, is given to 10th canto. in the Bhagavatam, it is called Nirodham. The 10th canto is called Nirodham. Why it's called Nirodham? Because if you study 10th canto seriously, and if you continuously hear 10th canto again and again and again, not once, twice, thrice, lifetime, if you keep hearing the 10th canto, automatically the mind will withdraw itself from all sense objects. At the moment what's happening is the mind is going after sense gratification, sense objects. Immediately it goes, as soon as there is something for sense enjoyment, immediately the senses will pull the mind towards that direction and mind will get absorbed in that. Isn't it? Five senses of knowledge, that's what it does all the time for us. Whenever is there something nice to look at, immediately the eye says to the mind, let's look at that. It's beautiful. As soon as you switch on the television, there is something interesting to watch, immediately the eyes pulls in that direction. So this is the duty of the mind. This is the duty of the mind. Mind is uncontrolled. Mind goes like that. And similarly, hearing also another sense, which does exactly the same thing. Beautiful music or something beautiful to hear, nice to hear, immediately the senses goes in that direction. Same thing, what to talk about the tongue. The moment you mention sweet rice, immediately the tongue starts working. Isn't it? The water starts coming up. Where is the sweet rice? That's the next one. So, like this, the taste and the ability to speak both requires the help of the tongue. So the tongue has dual function. And therefore the tongue is given the special position as the leader of all the senses. Of all the senses. The leadership is for the tongue. So tongue has got the leadership because of its dual functions, to speak as well as to taste. And similarly to smell, also we get victimized by that, perfume smelling. When you walk to the airport, there's somebody waiting there. Just try this out. And then, sir, how much is the bottle? Next question. So all these things are nothing but from Vedic philosophy. All this is this, you are just being victimized by the senses. That's all it is. But we don't think like that. As soon as the credit card is there to pay, and some girlfriend is waiting somewhere to receive that nice perfume, you are willing to buy it and take it with you. And that too duty free it is. So much more sensual enjoyment from that. So like this, we are getting cheated everywhere. But we don't know what is happening to us. But we do it. But strictly speaking, Bhagavatam is telling us, all what is happening is, you are getting cheated all the time. And therefore, Bhagavatam says to us, first take care of this thing called tongue. Because he is the leader. So, there is a statement in the Bhagavatam, na jayet rasanam yavar jidam sarvam jide rase. If you have won the tongue, you have won all the other senses. That's how it is. Na jayet rasanam yaval jidam sarvam jide rase. That you have not won any other senses, so long as you have not won the tongue. If you have won the tongue, jidam sarvam jide rase, you have won the tongue, you have won all the other senses. You won't get victimized by anything else. So all these things are there. The mind is there. The senses are there. They are dragging us all the time. In Bhagavatam, in different instances, you will find when Prahlad Maharaj and others are glorifying Krishna, they are referring to this. Jihva ekado uchiti vigarshati mahavidrutta chishnan astada gudaram shravanam gudashchal gano nyanaschavaradare kuja karma shaktir bahya sabatnya iva gehavadim lunandi. Krishna, Prahlada says to Krishna, jihva ekado uchiti vigarshati mahavidrutta, that this jihva, the tongue, and all the other senses, Prahlada is saying to Narasimha Murthy, are like different wives. They are all telling me, come with me, come with me, come with me. So, like this, what is my strength? What strength do I have to fight against them? One of them will always pull me in one direction or the other. We are all victims of this throughout the day. Jihvai gato ochida vikarshadi ma vidrutta shishno nyadastha gudaram shravanam kudaschil grano nyadascha baladrit kvacha karma shaktir bahya sabatnyam iva gehavadim lunandi. That lunandi, that is the beautiful part. That exactly like a one who has got many wives who are all telling the husband, come with me and come with me. These senses, so-called my wives, or these senses, they are driving me and pulling me in all different directions. I am helpless, says Prahlada to Narasimha Murthy. Yenmai dhunadigrhamedhi sugham hituchham kanduyayena karayoriva dukha dukham tripyandineha kribana bhudukha bhaja kandu divan manasijam vishaheta dhiraha. Then Prahlada says to Krishna Smamurti, Yen Maidhuna Digrahame di Sukham Hiducham. I got absorbed in this family life, thinking that I'm going to be happy in this. He's talking about a householder. That thinking that I'll be happy in householder life, and I got absorbed in that also. I tried that as well. What was happened? Tuchya Sukham, very limited happiness I get from that. But the input I have to put into that to get that limited happiness is so high that it is a totally business which is a complete loss, he says. Yan maithunadi grihamedhi sukham hitucham. And why? Kandu yayena karayoriva dukha dukham. Every time when I feel there is a little pleasure, it is like scratching something. Something I'm scratching. What happens when you scratch? Blood starts coming out from that. Isn't it? It's all misery at the end. The little bit, if you scratch your body, some mosquito or something has bitten you, scratch. Merely you scratch, there is blood or something comes out. And you feel more itchy at that time. So, there Prahlada is saying, Yen maidhuna di grihamedi sugam hiducham, kanduyena karayoriva dukha dukham. Only distress is at the end available. Trupyandi neha kribana bhudukha bhaja. Many, many different kinds of distresses is in storage for the householder. Householder, all kinds of distresses, he gets it. In different days, in different forms, from different sources. And he goes on with his householder, adjusting this, adjusting that, not getting anywhere. Kandu divan manasijam vishahedha dhiraham. So, a dhira, one should refrain from these businesses. That is Prahlada's instructions in the Bhagavadam. And because Prahlada shown, although born in a demoniac family, although he was born in a demoniac family, because of that good vasanas inside, which Narada Muni injected into his body, where did this vasanas come to Prahlada from? You must know who Prahlada is first of all, then you will know. People will always say, oh, Prahlada was born son of Hiranyakashipu, wasn't he? Was son of Hiranyakashipu. Although he was son of Hiranyakashipu, father so demoniac, son so saintly. How could this happen? In order to show to us how powerful vasanas are. That is why it is showing to us. See, father, because of the curse, offense he has created to the four Kumaras in Vaikuntham, they had to come as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu in that particular body, isn't it? Jaya and Vijaya, you know that story in the third canto. Jaya and Vijaya had to come as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. At the same time, the four Kumaras who were there, they also had to come here because they got angry in Vaikuntham. That was the mistake they made. So when Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were coming here, Jaya and Vijaya were coming here, Kumaras also had to come here. In three lifetimes, they also had to come. So that Kumaras, who that meeting in the third canto, if you really think about that, between Krishna, Jayavijaya and the four Kumaras. Remember that meeting happened in Vaikuntham, when Kumaras went to visit the Jayavijaya, put the bar, stopped them going in. Krishna came down and there was apology between all three of them, Krishna and the Kumaras and Jayavijaya. And eventually it was decided that Jayavijaya should come. That three births at least they have to come as demons. So those three demonic families, they had to take birth. Same thing happened to the Kumaras also. So four Kumaras who are so advanced in knowledge, who are so advanced in spiritual knowledge, they had to come here. And they came in the body of Prahlada. So, because that vasanas were good behind, so strong in Kumara's body, that is why in Prahlada's body, he was able to absorb those instructions from Sri Narada Maharshi immediately. And not only that, he became such a great devotee. Just see the power of vasanas. This is why always to create good vasanas in a person is the most important thing. We create good vasanas, it will show its potency at some time. It may not be now, but maybe later in another life. But vasanas are the most powerful thing that is driving us. So, Kumara's vasanas manifested in the form of Prahlada, and in order to show that, which is called Karma Vasana, the seventh canto was spoken. And the title for that in the spiritual language is Uti. Uti it is called. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam utaya uti. Uti means karma vasana. That karma vasana of Prahlada has come from this life of Kumaras, four Kumaras. That's why he was able to straight away take to it. Sri Narada Maharshi knew when Kayathu, Hiranyakashipu's wife, Kayathu was dragged away by the demigods, because they knew that Hiranyakashipu's son is in the womb. They wanted to kill the child because they thought, if Hiranyakashipu is so demoniac, what the son will be? This is what they were thinking. If Hiranyakashipu is so demoniac, what a demoniac son the son will be. He will turn the whole thing, creation, upside down. Already Hiranyakashipu was enough for them. So somehow or the other, when they realized that the son is being born, they came to get him. And they, because Kayathu was pregnant with Prahlada, and they were dragging Kayathu. At that time, Sri Narada Maharshi comes and tells them, please don't touch him. He is a devotee inside. And not only an ordinary devotee, he is not an ordinary devotee. He is a devotee of Prahlada's caliber. Prahlada's caliber. So there you can see, karma vasana, through these stories, Krishna is teaching us, telling us, Sukadeva Goswami is telling us, take note of all these things in your own life. If the vasanas are good, that will follow you in the right direction. Take you in the right direction, it won't let you go. But if the vasanas are bad, you have to be more cautious, not to be driven by them. Because bad vasanas will take us into bad association and will engage us in sinful activities. So, sargam visargam sthanam poshanam udi, manyundaram ishanukatha nirodham. Nirodham was what we spoken about in the 10th canto. So, nirodham is the goal of 10th canto. In order to stress nirodham, Krishna has spoken what is, Sudeva Goswami has spoken, Krishna's unlimited pastimes in the 10th canto. And if those nirodha, 10th canto, simply by studying 10th canto, one's mind will come under control. This is the guarantee from Sukadeva Goswami in the Bhagavadam. That 10th canto, if you have studied well, not that I heard it once, or I know everything now, that's enough. That's not how you study Bhagavadam. Bhagavadam you have to study in a different way. It's alright if you want to study topics like mathematics or physics or chemistry. But Bhagavadam is not to be studied like that. When you study Bhagavadam, the important thing to remember is this. That by studying Srimad Bhagavadam, and studying this 10th canto, is my devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, is it building up? One thing. Secondly, is my faith in the Bhagavadam is increasing? Is my faith in the Bhagavadam is increasing? Is my devotion is increasing? Is my faith in Krishna is increasing? So, the faith in the Shastram and in the words of the spiritual master, these are things called Shraddha, isn't it? So is my Shraddha increasing? Only then we are studying it properly. Otherwise we are not. We shouldn't study it like the way we study other subjects. That will not help. That's not what is studying Bhagavadam means. So that difference is to be noted. So, Nirodham, Mano Nirodham. So, after the mind has come under control, what is next? This is the question will come, isn't it? Once the mind has come under control, perfect control, where one is not disturbed anymore by any of these things, what's going on in this creation. Today, we are experiencing the distress and happiness of this world, isn't it? Happiness of this world. Why? Because we become a part of this world. We become a part of this world. We are unable to disconnect ourselves from this world. That's why we get affected by that. In fact, we get worried about things which we shouldn't be worrying about. Is it not? When you see the anxiety of these economists and scientists and all that, what will happen after 100 years in this planet, or 500 years from now, how important it is for them to control the temperature. It looks as though they have took up this burden on themselves. If somebody who has created this whole thing, do they not think that he has also got some responsibility in keeping it going? Is it so silly to think? This is called Maya. Maya's power is this. That to make us realize something what we don't have to worry about, make us worry about that. It's not for us to worry about what will happen after to this earth planet. As though we created this earth planet. This is the way they talk about it. As though they brought it with them when they came to this world. They have come here 50-60 years ago. Planet has been sitting here for millions of years. And they came here for 50-60 years and they are gone from here. But in the middle they are so concerned about this planet. What's going to happen here? This is Maya. Maya, this is why Shastram is pointing out to us. You know, in the Bhagavadam, how it opens up is like this. Anvayam vedirekabhyam yada sarvatra sarvadam. In the Chadishlogi Bhagavadam, there is this verse. Anvayam vedirekabhyam. That is how you understand Bhagavadam. Anvayam and vedirekam. What does that mean? Let's try to understand that. Anvayam means something that is in this world which never changes and always exists, which is not subject to any change. That is called Anvayam. Vedirekam means that which is always changing. That which is always changing. For example, to give you easier to understand, say there is an earthen pot made of earth, isn't it? Mud, it is made of. You made out of the mud, the potter made it as a nice earthen pot, put it in the fire and made it proper so that it can be used for different purposes, this, that and the other, whatever it is required for. So this earthen pot, when you heat it up, the material that is inside is still mud. It is the same earth, same mud that is used here. Only thing is, now it has taken the form of a pot. Another instance it may take the form of a vase. A third instance it may take some other form. We don't know. Like, say for example, gold if you take, what happens? Gold can be made to make earrings, to make a chain, to make bangles, or to make anklets. Different shapes it takes, isn't it? But the material is still gold in all these different conditions, isn't it? It's not different. So, the Vedirekam is this, taking different forms. This whole creation is nothing but that. The what Krishna has created is different forms, different names we have given to them. When the same mud takes the pot form, we call it as an earthen pot. When it takes a vase form, we call it as a vase. Isn't it? So, different forms it may take, but the substance is the same, unchanging, which is not changing any time. Is that earth in that? That is Anvayam. The form what it is taking is called Vedirekam. It is called Vedirekam. So, similarly, in this whole creation, there is one thing which is unchanging, which is always there, never affected by anything. But there is another thing which is constantly changing in this world, isn't it? Say, take for example, the consciousness of every living entity. He remains in conscious form in the presence of the soul associated with consciousness. He is experiencing everything in this world, but he is not changing. That factor inside, that soul in presence of consciousness is not changing. What is changing is the external appearance. The body is changing. Boyhood, youthhood, old age, like that. White body, black body, brown body, yellow body, all these kinds of bodies. All these are changing aspects. But unchanging aspect is the soul and the consciousness, which is consciousness. Consciousness has to be mentioned there because it is through consciousness you know something. Otherwise you can't know anything, isn't it? It is through consciousness we perceive everything. Bhodam. Sandra Anandava Bhodhalmagam. That Bhodhalmagam. That Sandra Ananda Bhodam. That means Anandam Sandram. Sandra Anandava means which is very much in a condensed form. And that knowledge of perceiving of something that exists in this world is called avabhodam. Avabhodam means that consciousness. The existence of so many things in this creation. So all that is known through the presence of the soul in that, which is always existing. Like Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning, isn't it? What did Krishna say? All the time I have existed, you have also existed. But then what has changed? You have changed your body. That means the body has changed many times. But you have not changed. I have not changed. That's what Krishna was pointing out in Bhagavad Gita in the beginning. Isn't it? So, similarly here, Anvayam Vedirekabhyam. So, through Anvayam and through Vedirekam, you will understand in the Bhagavatam what is permanent and what is the substance, what is the essence of all. That is what is to be known. So after Mano Nirodham, which is acquired from the 10th canto, when we come to the 11th canto, what we will see, find there is how to achieve that state of consciousness, where you don't fall back again into the material consciousness, where you are seeing so many objects in this world, so many. What happens is, when we see different objects, automatically the mind will respond to that. How? Ragam and dvesham. Either attachment to it or hate towards that. One of these two things will build up. We can't have an indifferent view to anything. Say for example, if you see a flower, we will immediately make a comment, oh, it's very nice, it smells good. Say sometimes flower has no smell. We look at it, a useless flower, we immediately put it back. Isn't it? Why? Why that thing has come to us? That is the nature of the mind. Ragam and dvesham. All this is happening because the mind has not come to the proper situation. So ragam dvesham will come up from that. And in order that it has to go, liberation is not possible. Freedom from this material existence is not possible without, as long as these things do exist. Ragam and dvesham, attachment and aversion or hate, is not a quality of the soul. It is a quality of the mind. And the mind, when it is, so you can see purification of mind involves all these things. It's not so simple that, oh, I've chanted so many rounds, I'm fully purified now. It doesn't happen like that. A lot of things to happen before that, completely to happen. So, in the Ekadasha Skandam, what Krishna is referring to is, moving from 10th canto, after the mind has come under complete control, the person is now qualified for what is called liberation. Liberation from this. He is liberated now. He is not anymore a victim of the three modes of nature. He is not anymore a victim of the three modes of nature. What is his position then? He has become qualified for liberation. Or in other words, no more modes of nature can touch him. He will never be disturbed by anything what happens in this world. That is mukti. So, atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam udaya manvandaram ishanukatha nirodho mukti. Mukti. Nirodham is 10th canto and mukti is 11th canto. Liberation is 11th canto. When the mind has come to that state of consciousness, that state of spiritual consciousness, at that point, Ekadasha Skandam will be understood properly. This is what the difficulty with Ekadasham is. Ekadasham's knowledge is so high that even if we break our nerves all the time, we won't be able to experience that. And as far as Krishna is concerned, knowledge is only understood by someone when he is experiencing it. Otherwise, it's not knowledge. So for example, theoretically, I have studied the whole Ekadasha Skandam. All the Ekadasha Skandam verses I have memorized. And if somebody asks me, I can answer that also. That is not studying Ekadasham. Studying Ekadasham means, what does Ekadasham say about the condition of the living entity at that time? That has to be experienced within us. Then you have understood Ekadasham. So you see the problem where it is. That it is not like all the other 10 cantos where we can understand and relish and experience to some degree. But when it comes to Ekadasha Skandam, the whole thing is understood only when it is experienced by us. Only when it is experienced by us. And that experience won't come easily. Won't come easily. It can only happen. Those who have understood Ekadasha Skandam is very, very rare in this world. In this world, Ekadasha Skandam. It's because of it. When I say experience mean, understood means who have experienced it. The way Krishna has spoken in the Ekadasha. Krishna is presenting in the Ekadasha Skandam that knowledge from which you don't move anymore after that. Nothing more to be known after that. That is the beauty of Ekadasha Skandam. After, once you have understood Ekadasha and experienced it, there is nothing more to be known after that. Krishna says, this is the essence of all the Vedas, all the Vedic literatures. Nothing more to go further than that. But to get to that stage is difficult. And those great commentators on Srimad Bhagavatam, they have found it extremely hard to touch this 11th canto. Because of this, they can also comment on it.
But at the same time, they know their own shortcomings, their own inability to go further on that canto. Therefore, Vaikarisha Skandam, when it was commented by Sridhara Swami, Sridhara Swami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most popular commentary, because Sridhara Swami had a special mercy received for him from Narasimha Murthy's upasana. He served Narasimha Murthy so well, Narasimha Murthy gave this benediction to him, that you write this commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and that will be the commentary forever. After Sridhara Swami's commentary, so many commentaries followed, but none of them was accepted in the same level as Sridhara Swami's commentary was. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as you know, when he studied Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhara Swami's commentary was kept as the ideal commentary on the Bhagavatam. So, why was Sridhara Swami given this position? Because in Sridhara Swami's commentary, he had total realization of what he was writing. And the whole 11th canto became a lot more easier for others to understand through the commentary of Sridhara Swami. Sridhara Swami's commentary. It's called Bhavartha Deepika. And not only Sridhara Swami wrote this commentary, after Sridhara Swami wrote that commentary, other commentators came to write more commentary on his commentary. You see, his commentary, Bhavartha Deepika, was there. And in order to explain Bhavartha Deepika further, other commentators have come. They wrote the book called Bhavartha Deepika Prakashika, they call it. In order to explain further than that, so that people can experience their realization of reading Sridhara Swami's commentary. So famous and so popular was that commentary on the Bhagavatam. So he was given that special position because Sridhara Sagalam Veti Shri Nrisimha Prasadada. That is why he got that capacity. So without Krishna's mercy, it is not possible to achieve that. This is the first thing to know. Whether it is Sridhara Swami, whether it is anybody else in this world, whether it is Uddhava, whether it is someone else, doesn't matter. Spiritual knowledge, Krishna has explained very nicely in the Ekadasham everything, but it's not happening to us. Just like when we read Bhagavad Gita, we read Dehinosmin Yatha Dehe Kaumaram Yavanam Jara Tatha Dehandara Praptir Dhirastatrana Mukhyadi. How many times we have heard these words? But how dhira are we? As soon as the sickness comes, we run to NHS or to the chemist. Dhira statra namukhyadi. Dhira is never disturbed. If anybody asks, we give the answer. Hey, Prabhu, don't get disturbed. It's all in the mind. Nothing to do with the body. This, that. Fine. Prabhu is running. You are also running. Everybody is running. Why? Because the knowledge hasn't come, has not worked inside. So similarly, Ekadasham is on a much higher level. In Bhagavad Gita, it's a lot more on the basics level. But Ekadasham is on a much more higher level. So that's why to absorb this knowledge, this only can happen when Krishna wants that to happen. When Krishna wants that to happen, and when Krishna wants that to happen, then there is nothing can stop it also. It will happen. And that is why in the Bhagavatam commentary, in many instances, when Ekadasham comes, these commentators have gone and said to Krishna, if you don't give me that mercy, it cannot be done. It cannot be done. That is how difficult that Ekadasha Skandam is. And in many instances in the Bhagavatam, we have heard about this, that how fervently, how seriously they had mentioned to... many of them stopped at the 10th canto. Many of them said to Krishna, that give us this capacity to understand this. You give us the understanding. Because they all said like this to Krishna, when you spoke Ekadasha Skandam to Uddhava, Uddhava Upadesham or instructions to Uddhava, you must have thought in your own mind how much renunciation, how much devotion and how much knowledge Uddhava must have. Krishna must have decided already. And that much Uddhava got, isn't it? That much Uddhava got. And on that basis, Uddhava was able to get his realizations. That you will see when we come to the end of Ekadasha Skandam, when Uddhava leaves Krishna finally, Krishna tests Uddhava how much he has understood. That is the beauty of that Ekadasha Skandam. Here is a spiritual master. Krishna is in the role of a spiritual master now, not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the role of a spiritual master, he is testing the disciple, how much my disciple has understood now. And he gets the answer from the disciple in a positive way. Disciple says to the spiritual master that all that what he has said to me is now working in me. It is happening to me. I got to that stage. And Uddhava walks to Badrinath from there. And that is the time what we see in the third canto when he met Vidura in the banks of river, Yamuna river, Kalinda river, where there was a conversation. Vidura was lamenting, "Oh, I missed Krishna. I went on wandering around in the name of pilgrimage everywhere. All holy places I was visiting." Now he was on his way back to Hastinapur. And he meets Uddhava there. If you remember in the third canto, one evening when Vidura was sitting there in the Yamuna river bank, it was the sun was just setting, so that the light wasn't strong enough. It was a very little light. At that time, Vidura was bathed in the river. He sat there and he was chanting the holy name at that time, thinking about Krishna and chanting the holy name. It was suddenly that one old person with a bundle on his head came running very fast, kept his bundle on the riverbank, went into the river, bathed himself, came out and performed his ablutions and started applying the tilak and started moving, taking this bundle and started moving out. It was then that Vidura noticed that. And when he noticed that, he suddenly came to his mind, "Is it not Uddhava who is going there?" He immediately called him Uddhava, he said. Uddhava, immediately as soon as he heard the voice of Vidura, he recognized the voice and said, "Is that not Vidura?" Because the light wasn't enough. It was more or less dark. They couldn't even see each other. But from the sound, they recognized each other. They embraced each other. And when they embraced each other, Vidura felt that Uddhava was not the same Uddhava before. There was so much change in him. Why? This Ekadasi Skandam has gone in. And it has changed him to that degree. That is the power of that knowledge. And he was in so much ecstasy that Krishna has gone in the form of Ekadasi Skandam. And inside it is giving that blissful experience. The blissful nature of the soul is coming out. And on the head he was carrying Krishna's shoes. And he was instructed by Krishna that "I have instructed you this Ekadasi Skandam. Go to Badrinath and hand over this message to Naranarayana Krishi who are performing penances there." This was the instructions. And Uddhava was on his way to Badrinath. And Vidura asked Uddhava, "Please let me know what Krishna instructions Krishna has given you. Let me also share that." Uddhava says to him, "I have no time." Can you imagine? Uddhava says to him, "I have no time. I am busy," he says. I cannot stop," he says. He was so much in ecstasy of this Krishna consciousness, what Krishna has given to him before his departure. He just couldn't hold it. And in that blissful consciousness, he was running to Badrinath through Haridwar. So he says to Vidura, "Only thing I can tell you now is that I am not in a position to stand here. I have to go. I cannot. I have lost control on my body and mind. I am so much in that consciousness now. I am on my way to Badrinath." Vidura was crying. Seeing Vidura's pitiable condition, Uddhava mentioned, came up to his mind, "You don't have to worry, Vidura. Before Krishna left, Krishna has also spoken about you something. One day, before Krishna left this world, Maitreya Maharshi came to see him." All the great sages were coming to see Krishna at that time, because they all knew that the time has come for going back to the spiritual world. Krishna was concluding, winding up his pastimes in this world. This was known to all the great sages. They know everything, what is happening, Krishna's plans were. So they were all coming one after the other and paying their respects and bidding farewell or saying goodbye to Krishna. And Krishna gave personal instructions to great sages who are his dearest friends. Or in other words, Durvasa Muni, Angiras, and Parashuram, all the great personalities, Vishwamitra, Vasishtha, all of them, great souls. Among them, there was Maitreya Maharshi also. So to Maitreya Maharshi, Krishna says to him like this, and Uddhava overheard this. What was that? Uddhava was standing there. Krishna says to Maitreya Maharshi, "This Uddhava, he is very close to me. He was very close to me. And therefore, I have given him everything what is required to know in this world. That knowledge I have given to him. Similarly, just like Uddhava, I also had another one person who was very dear to me. His name is Vidura," he said. "And he left Hastinapur and everything and he went away, took sannyas and went away. and it is months together, he is wandering around all over in the name of pilgrimage. I do miss him before I leave. I do miss him that I am leaving, I can't see him. But when he comes back, he will come to see you in Haridwar. When he comes to see you, you should tell him everything what I have spoken to Uddhava. Why? Maitreya Maharshi has received Bhagavadam Upadesham, the instructions of Srimad Bhagavadam, in another parambara. As you know, there are two paramparas for Srimad Bhagavadam. We have spoken that before. One through Vedavya, Srinarada Maharshi, this one parambara. There is another one through Sanghyayana Maharshi and Brihaspati. There is another parambara, Adishesha Bhagavan. From Balaram, there is another parambara, which is also in the parambara of Srimad Bhagavadam. There are two paramparas which are disciplic successions in the Srimad Bhagavadam. So, Maitreya Maharshi knows these things. So he told Maitreya Maharshi that you should give whatever questions Vidura has, you should answer them and give all the help what he needs. Unfortunately, I'll miss him. I have to leave. Saying that, Krishna left. So Uddhava overheard all these things and naturally he kept it in his mind. And when he met Vidura, he was so happy that he said to Vidura, Vidura, this is what Krishna has said while leaving this world. And you have to go to Maitreya Maharshi to inquire further. I am not the person to give you that. See, spiritual knowledge also, you have to receive from the right source, in the right way. Only then it will have its impact. That's why it is so important to receive from the right person, in the right way. There is a system for all these things. Otherwise, it will not have its effect. This is what is spoken about that. So he was told, Uddhava said to Vidura, you go to Maitreya Maharshi, Maitreya Maharshi will look after you. He will answer all your queries and he'll give you the proper instructions. To me, I have received it from Krishna himself. So I have to go. When Vidura heard this, what Uddhava has spoken, he was in tears. He was in tears. Why? He was thinking that the Krishna, who I had closely associated with so many years, and whose mercy and devotion I have enjoyed so long, I had to, at the time of departure, I could not see him. This was hurting him very much. You know, because of Vidura's devotion to Krishna, all the Kauravas used to make fun of him, used to make fun of Vidura. Because Vidura's devotion was very special to Krishna. Vidura used to take Krishna's shoes every day and wash them nicely and keep it ready for him to go. And like this, a lot of menial services Vidura used to do for Krishna. And Krishna also very wholeheartedly accepted Vidura as his dearest servant, which we know in Mahabharata stories many times you will see this. So now Vidura felt that at this last moment, I could not spend the time with Krishna. What an unfortunate person I am. He was thinking like that, and then he follows Uddhava. Uddhava goes to Haridwar. After a short time, Uddhava was going so fast, Vidura lost the sight of Uddhava. Uddhava was gone. But somehow, Vidura managed to reach Haridwar. He meets Maitreya Maharshi, and then the conversation between Maitreya Maharshi and Uddhava, Vidura is what you see in the third canto. From third canto onwards. So, 11th canto, the seed was shown in the third canto itself. You see? The seed was shown in the third canto itself while explaining about Uddhava's condition, state of mind at that time after receiving instructions from Krishna. Now, Vidura has left and Uddhava has also gone, in the Bhagavadam, when you come back, you will see there that the liberated state of Uddhava, is, if you observe that, you will see that that is what is called a liberation. A person, when it's liberated, what is he like? If you ask that question, you can look at Uddhava's condition. Then you will know what this liberation means. That no more disturbed by any of the modes of nature. When Uddhava was leaving Krishna, Uddhava was in a deep distress. That I will not see this form again, that beautiful form of Krishna. I will not see this again. So what did he do? He went and paid obeisances from the friend. He went to the left side, paid obeisances from there. He went to the back side, paid obeisances from there. He went to the right side, paid obeisances from there. He went circumambulating Krishna a few times, again and again and again. Why? Because in his mind he was thinking, when will I see this beautiful form again? That form of Krishna. 115 years a servant, Krishna's servant. He has enjoyed and lived with Krishna and enjoyed that beauty so much that he could not even think in his dream that he has to be separated from that form. So he was crying. Uddhava was crying at that time. And you will see, when we'll discuss that up to that point when we get there. But the important thing to remember is that Ekadasha means liberation. Liberation means mukti. Just like Mano Nirodham is 10th canto. Mano Nirodham is 10th canto. Dashamam, dashamam, dashame lakshyam. It says that the goal is, the 10th goal is the Nirodham, Mano Nirodham. Similarly, the goal of the 11th canto is mukti or liberation. And then the last canto after that is 12th canto. After liberation, is there anything else? That's the question comes. There is something after that also. Even after liberation, what is that to be done? To serve Krishna. That is the ashrayam. Ashrayam means taking complete shelter of Krishna. Or in other words, serving Krishna in the liberated state, you can call it. You can call it as serving Krishna in the liberated state. We are serving Krishna now in the conditioned state, isn't it? In conditioned state, our service is conditional. That you give me this, I'll serve you this much. This is a service in the conditioned state. In the liberated state, the service is different. Liberated states, the service is out of love for Krishna. There is no other happiness in this world, never satisfied by serving Krishna. Imagine a state of consciousness like that. Never satisfied in serving Krishna. That is a state of consciousness. That is why it's called ashrayam. Ashrayam means complete shelter. Samam bhavanam, Prabhupada translates it like that. So, sargam, visargam, sthanam, poshanam, uti, manyandaram, ishanukatha, nirodham, mukti, ashrayam. This is how from canto 3 onwards, canto 12, it is titled in this way. So in the end of second canto, Sukadeva Goswami will say to Parikshit, this is what each canto I am going to talk about. And when you have, and particularly this canto 10 and canto 11, which is nirodham and mukti, they are very, very, very significant. Now, I have a lot of things to say about before going into 11th canto, the background of 11th canto. Because when you understand the background of 11th canto, you will appreciate the greatness of 11th canto. How much Sudeva Goswami has been putting the foundation for that, how many chapters in advance he has started this. He has started this foundation work for the 11th canto. Strictly speaking, in Ekadasha Skandam, there are two important topics discussed. One is called Nimi Jayandeya Samvadam. The great King Nimi and Rishabhadev's children Jayanti. Jayanti was his wife and Jayanti's children. Kavi Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pippalayanan Avir Hotra Dhumila Chamasa Karabhajana. The nine sages. There is a conversation between them about Bhagavata Dharmam or Krishna consciousness. So, Nimi Jayandaya Samvadam or Krishna consciousness is one topic that is discussed. Then another topic that is discussed is Krishna and Uddhava Samvadam. Between Krishna and Uddhava, that conversation. So, first 4-5 chapters is Nimi Jayandaya Samvadam and balance 26 or so chapters is Krishna and Uddhava Samvadam. These are the two topics that is discussed in Canto 11. There is nothing else. These two topics that is discussed. And both are equally important for a devotee to know. They are equally important for a devotee to know. So, before we go into that, Nirodho Mukti Ashrayam. Nirodham Mukti Ashrayam. That is 10th Canto, Canto 11 and Canto 12. Three topics that is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, I mentioned this before. What is the difference between Canto 10 and Canto 11? That also we should know. What is the difference? Difference is this. That Canto 10 is called, as I mentioned before, these are the two cantos, most important cantos of Bhagavatam. Canto 10 is called Vaikarikam. Vaikarikam means that Krishna's relationship in the 10th canto is fully emotional, isn't it? Everything based on emotions. Let's take for example, in childhood, captured all the gopis' heart. All the gopis were attracted to Krishna, isn't it? And that relationship went on for a long time. Then with the cowherd boys, another relationship went on for a long time. When he grew up, he came to Mathura and then installed Ugrasena as the king. And then when moved to Dwaraka, another relationship started with his wives. 16,108 wives Krishna had. And then there, the husband-wife relationship. So there was another relationship built up there. So like this, in everything there is an emotional element involved in that. You don't find there very much about the gopis or Rukmini Devi or Satyabhama or any one of those queens, all of them. Their relationship, it was very personal, isn't it? Very personal relationship. The beauty of whole 10th canto is this relationship between Krishna and the gopis. Krishna and Rukmini, Krishna and all the other wives. And similarly with all Krishna and parents, Yashoda Devi and Nanda Maharaj, isn't it? So many relationships you find with father, Nanda Baba and Yashoda Devi. A beautiful relationship you find in that 10th canto. Similarly, a beautiful relationship you find with Krishna and the gopis. And Krishna and the cowherd boys. Krishna and the queens of Dwaraka. Rukmini Devi and Satyabhama and several other wives, all of them together. All this goes through in 10th canto. That means relationships. That's what 10th canto is all about. And that means based on loving relationship. Special love. How they all loved Krishna in different patterns, different styles. Satyabhama's love was different than Rukmini's love. Jambavati's love was different than Draupadi's love. Kunti Devi's love was different from somebody else's love. So, but all of them had love for Krishna. So different kinds of loving relationships, that's what we were listening. Subhadra Devi's relationship with Krishna. And similarly, Subhadra Devi's relationship with Arjuna. All that we have seen in the Bhagavatam in different instances, isn't it? But all that comes to a particular time, a closure in the 10th canto. When? When Sudama's story comes in. As soon as Sudama comes in, there we are meeting some great devotees there. Who are not ordinary people. They are not members of Krishna's family. That you have to remember. Whereas gopis and the Rukmini Devi and all that, they were all part of Krishna's families, one sense, isn't it? To large degree, Krishna grew up with them, and more or less all kinds of the childhood pastimes, what Krishna performed, you can see they were like a family altogether. The whole gopis and Vrindavanam, they were one family. But within that family, there was all this disturbance, the pastimes of Krishna happening and giving them a happiness every day, further and further increasing that. So that was happened in Vrindavanam. Then, so Vrindavana Leela, then Madhura Leela. When he came to Madhura Leela, you see the pastimes of Madhura Leela is less compared to Vrindavanam. And Madhura, how Krishna related with all the royal family members there, comes as royal family members and all that. There also you see a relationship between Krishna and the royal family members. After moved on to Dwaraka, also you will see a different relationship building up with wives there, Rukmini Devi and Satyabhama and all the other wives there. So they are all relationships based on family or extensions of the family like that. But as soon as the finishes there, Sudama walks in. It's a new devotee relationship comes there, pure devotee's relationship. Sudama's relationship is so pure with Krishna. It is an eye-opener to any devotee that what Krishna expects from us to be dear to Him. If you want to get Krishna's pleasure, if you want to be recognized by Krishna, if you want to get Krishna's attention to capture us, then we have to follow the footsteps of Sudama. That knowledge, that renunciation, jnanam and vairagyam, and that above all, that devotion, what Sudama had, all comes in that pastime of Krishna with Sudama. What else is there? If you move on from then till the end of 10th canto, one particular aspect of Krishna, you will notice that. In all the pastimes from then on, what is that? The extraordinary, unusual, and extraordinary yogic power of Krishna, you will see in that Bhagavatam there. Yogic power. Yogeshwara Krishna. That Yogeshwara, his yogic power, which no one else has exhibited in this world before, any time, which Krishna has exhibited, that is what you find from Sudama's story onwards till the end of 10th canto. All the pastimes, we'll go through that very briefly in all of those pastimes, and you will notice the pastimes and the power of yoga, what Krishna has exhibited as Yogeshwara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you don't find that in any other place as much as in that few different pastimes which comes after Sudama's. There is the different stories there. If you remember that Krishna accepting invitation from Shrutadeva and Bahulashva. Shrutadeva was the king, Shrutadeva was the Brahmana, Bahulashva was the king. And going to both of them at the same time with a group of sages going to Bahulashva, the same group of sages going to Shrutadeva. And two Krishnas in two different dresses. And both of them going, and both of them thinking, we are this. And both of them getting confused, who is who. That is the beauty of that. That particular pastime in Shrutadeva and Bahulashva, you'll notice this, all this happening. It's like this, so many powers, yogic powers, were very, very unusual and very extraordinary pastimes Krishna has shown there. Why did Krishna show this? Why did Krishna show this? Why Sukadeva Goswami spoke them at that time? Because Srimad Bhagavatam has one important message to us. One important message to us. The message is this, that after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, if you still think there is someone else to be worshipped in this world, then you have not understood Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the message. If ever you have to worship someone in this world, after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it is only Krishna and Krishna alone, nobody else. This is the first message. Secondly, through Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna has gave us two these important realizations. One, serving Krishna and surrendering to Krishna and becoming Krishna's devotee is the topmost goal in life. Topmost goal in life. Everything else is a secondary thing. Number one. Number two, Krishna also wanted to say there that becoming a devotee and developing devotion for Krishna is the highest goal of life, is the highest goal and highest achievement in life. So these two things, one, to recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrendering unto Him and serving Him and becoming His devotee and developing devotion for Him. And that is the perfection of life. And these are the two points, these are the two things which Krishna wanted us to understand before we move into Ekadasha Skandam. Before we move into Ekadasha Skandam. So in order to establish this, Krishna's pastimes, the few pastimes which Krishna has, Sudeva Goswami has mentioned from the pastime of Sudama Brahmana, is all bringing up to this point. It's all of them bringing up to this one particular point, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if ever one has to serve anyone in this world, it is Krishna, nobody else. And secondly, developing devotion, through the process of devotion, to develop Krishna consciousness is the proper process. So these two important things are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Next Sunday, when we start talking about those pastimes, you will see how carefully Sudeva Goswami has developed that mood in these chapters prior to entering into 11th canto. How beautifully he has done that. Because each of those pastimes, Krishna wants us to mention to us this one point, that come to Ekadasham, but come with full preparation. Don't come without prepared in the mind. That we must have that devotion in our heart for Krishna before we start hearing from Krishna in Ekadasha Skandam. So Ekadasham's beauty is this, that 10th canto prepares us for that purity of heart, what is necessary, and that devotion, unflinching devotion towards Krishna. There's no one else to be worshipped in this world except Krishna. That is why all that stories prior to prior to the 11th canto is talking about. Prior to 11th canto is talking about. So as I mentioned before, 10th canto, 11th canto, both are equally important. 10th canto is Manonirodham and 11th canto is Mukti. Both cantos are Krishna. They are not different from Krishna. And the way everything expressed in the 10th canto is full of relationships and emotional relationships. That is why it is called Vaikarikam. Vaikarikam means coming from Vikaram. Vikaram means emotions. From emotions, how the relations are built. In the 11th canto, what is discussed is all Vaicharikam. Vaicharikam means from Vicharam, from thought process. When Krishna is talking to Uddhava, all that instructions in the 11th canto, it's all based on the thoughts. Only on a higher intellectual level, one can understand it and one can realize it. And if you can realize it, then you will experience that what Krishna is talking about. So long as we don't realize it, it will also be very, it will remain as a unknown entity for us. So you can see the difference. 10th canto you can relish it because it is emotional. We all have that emotional nature, feelings. Krishna's all childhood pastimes, pastimes with the gopis, pastimes with the cowherd boys, pastimes in Dwaraka, everything is relishable for a common mind. But when you come to 11th canto, all that disappears. That's gone. And there, it is a serious matter, what is discussed. Krishna himself becomes very serious. No more the childhood of Vrindavanam or the friendly relationships with the wives in Dwaraka, that's all gone. Now it's a completely different picture, what you get there in the 11th canto. So there you will find that it is much more on a intellectual level or even on higher, on a spiritual level. Everything has been spoken. So that's why 10th canto is Vaikarikam, emotional, and 11th canto is Vaicharikam, which is on a thoughtful level. So sometimes most of us are used to the pastimes of Krishna's 10th canto, which is much more relished by us due to its beauty. But 11th canto also can be sometimes very stimulating for those whose mind is inclined in that way. Everyone may not be. Normally, you find people either involved in 10th or involved in the 11th. It is rare you find who are involved in both, 10th and 11th. That is because of the nature. Because all of us are by nature like that. Some of us are very emotional. Some of us are some of us are like stones, but our heads will work better way. So for them, also there is way is necessary. So Krishna has not forgotten them also. For them, Krishna has kept the 11th canto for them. But whatever it is important to hear the canto 10 and canto 11 both and study them as best as we can. Because by simply studying them, we get closer to Krishna. That is the beauty of those. There is no other canto, not even Bhagavad Gita will bring as close to Krishna as 10th and 11th canto. Bhagavad Gita is instruction in the battlefield to inspire Arjuna to fight. And also, Krishna gave the ABC of spiritual knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. But in Bhagavadam, Krishna has perfected that in the Bhagavadam. Ekadasha Skandam is perfection of that spiritual knowledge. And also, through a 10th canto, He gave us that purity of heart, what is required, and how to develop that devotion in our endeavor to understand Krishna. That's what we are trying to do, trying to understand Krishna. What is Krishna? We hear so much about Krishna, but what is Krishna? And that understanding will come from the knowledge in 11th canto. We will come to that all in detail in due course as we get through. But prior to that, there's a lot more things to say before we go into the 11th canto. 11th canto. What is this 10th and 11th canto relationship and all the different chapters there? And prior to discussing 11th canto, we also have to see that why Krishna chose this path of explaining to Arjuna. That all you will find it much more interesting. We'll do that next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.